The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to Part of the Answer, the show that gives you a peek into the minds of some of Chicagoland's best and brightest business, community, and political leaders. You'll hear the success stories behind their organizations and hear their vision for impacting Chicagoland and Illinois. No sound bites, no spin, just an authentic conversation about how they're making a difference in their community through their organization. Now, here's your host, Dan Ehrman.
Welcome to Part of the Answer on AM 560. I'm Dan Ehrman, and today joined in studio by Darren Bailey. Darren, welcome.
Hey, it's an honor to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
I'm excited you made the trek up from Central Illinois and are on the campaign trail here running for governor. I imagine it's been quite a journey. How long ago was it that you began this decision to move forward?
Well, our role in state politics began when I, in 2017, over the July 4th weekend, when we were called to primary our sitting representative, who voted for a budget to increase our taxes by 32%. And then after my first term, our state senator stepped down, and those same people came and solicited us to step up and represent a larger footprint. And then about a year ago, this little thing called these lockdowns and shutdowns that I just didn't quite feel good about, we sued the governor on July 2nd of 2020. We were rendered a victory in that decision, which, by the way, still stands, has not been dismissed or overturned. And through that, getting invites up into this area to speak at open school rallies, open business rallies, it became apparent that there was a movement taking place, that people across Illinois were looking for bold and courageous leadership. So Cindy and I, our family, our church, we laid that down before the Lord for a time of prayer and fasting. I talked with several other candidates that I thought might be interested in running for governor. I mean, hey, I represent the most conservative part of the state, so I thought I could stay there as a senator, term limit myself, and support a governor. But unfortunately, all I heard was, get along, go along. I didn't sense the backbone. I didn't sense the leadership. So we decided to throw our hat in this past February.
I imagine that was quite a choice and a challenge to dive in on that. And I want to get to some of that. And I want to get to talking about your faith and how that informs your politics and kind of interweaves with it. But before we go there, just giving people a little bit of background on who you are. You're a third generation farmer working on a fourth generation farm.
Absolutely. We've farm south east Illinois, south of Effingham. My three sons and I, we farm 12,000 acres. We're row crop corn, soybeans, and wheat. We have a trucking company. We have an excavating business. And that's really all I've ever wanted to do. I love farming. I've waited for our children to come back to the farm. When the last one showed up, that's when God called us to this journey. And we had four grandchildren then. Today we have ten grandchildren. And, Cindy and I began to realize, especially in our part of the world, where there just wasn't a lot of opportunity. I mean, Southern Illinois has been dependent on oil, coal, and farming. And those three industries are shrinking. Coal, obviously, is under attack. And we love the idea of our family growing, flourishing together in southeast Illinois. And in order to create the opportunities for the future, we knew that we had to get involved and stand up for Illinois, common sense values.
12,000 acres is a lot. That's a big farm.
We stay busy. We operate in about, and that's what a lot of people don't understand. The profit margin in farming has shrunk a lot, and farmers, we're dependent on the weather. We're dependent on the government to set our prices. I don't get to call somebody and say, hey, I'll sell you something. It's what the Chicago Board of Trade does. It establishes the prices based on supply and demand, most of which the government establishes through exports and imports. So I love it. I wouldn't have it any other way, but like I said, we want my grandchildren to be able to flourish on the farm. So in our daughter Abigail, she works with Cindy. We founded Full Armor Christian Academy several years ago. So our daughter Abby is married to a youth and worship minister in the area, and she is a co-administer to Full Armor Christian Academy with my wife Cindy.
That is an awful lot going on for life, and you're jumping into the public arena in this. For folks just joining us, you're hearing from State Senator Darren Bailey. He's a gubernatorial candidate for the primary is what, next June?
Next June 28 is the next primary, delayed because of the census delay.
Well, and Darren, I'm thankful that you've come in here to be on part of the Answer on AM 560. I'm Dan Ehrman, and Darren is... As you look forward in going from the work that you've always done and diving into politics, was that something that you were seeking out coming in? How did that kind of transpire for you to get involved?
Well, absolutely not. I did serve 17 years on our local school board of education from 1995 to 2012. Cindy and I have been very instrumental in our community. We're Rotary members. We're very, very active in our church. We've always focused on the youth. And when it came to back to that 2017 date, many people might remember that the Illinois General Assembly came into session over the July 4th weekend. We were celebrating Cindy's birthday that weekend, and yeah, I believe it was a total God thing that I was totally checked out of politics, because politicians are corrupt. Politicians are lazy. Politicians, just make life harder for us by doing what they do. And I wanted nothing to do with it. And I found it a little easier, especially when I discovered that, the General Assembly had checked in under the guise of the 4th of July weekend. I began exposing what I was discovering within my Facebook group, and it exponentially grew, and I just kept complaining. I really liked that. It's easy to complain, on social media, but in our area, the day came when our friends and our family began to come and say, you need to represent us, and I knew I was in trouble, and I, in of myself, said absolutely not, but Cindy understood the bigger plan, and again, we laid that down to our church and our community, prayed, fasted, and it just became evident that this is the new mission field that God wanted us to approach, and we're very blessed that our three sons were able to manage, take over, my role of the farm, and that our daughter was able to, accomplish the co-administration of Full Armor. So that alleviated us, because they knew we're in this, full time. We're putting 150% of our energy into getting the state under control. We believe it is that important.
One of the issues that you bring up right off the bat is schools. And to me, I almost see there being a few different issues with schools going on. First and foremost right now is we have a governor who has shut down schools for over a year, and you've got schools that are, kids are masked up, socially distanced, they're not able to do education. You step in as governor, what are you hoping to be able to accomplish?
Well, I believe it is government's role to educate and inform, the public. I believe one of the tools to do that is the Illinois Department of Public Health, to educate, inform, offer alternatives. Absolutely never, never, ever to mandate. Public education was designed to be governed locally. That's what a locally elected Board of Education does. So, we're blessed here in Illinois to have a free range for private Christian education, but we have to understand that private Christian education will never replace public education. So one of the day one moves that I look to begin work on through either JCAR, through rules, as Governor Pritzker has accomplished, or at least through a law, is to clean our schools of unfunded mandates. Get the state's heavy hand out of our schools and return the governance to the local elected school board, and let the communities decide what's best for their children.
One of the things I think a lot of people aren't aware of is high school wasn't the norm in America until World War II. And I think that's a shocking thing to consider of the change that's happened in just basically my parents' lifetime of, you know, that standard practice. It's assumed that high school is something there. And to me, that points toward a larger sea change going on in our culture where, you know, I'm 41. I grew up in the Chicago area, and there's kind of an assumption of a go along to get along. Things are what they are. They always have been, and we'll continue that forward, and it'll be all good. And right now we're in this moment where the Democratic leadership in Illinois has poked Mama Bear in Illinois, and folks are looking at this and saying, no more. And there's an element in an understanding of a sense of free agency in individuals right now that I've never felt in my entire lifetime. And we're in a moment right now where we're in that sea change. How do you hope to capitalize on that and to push it forward and lead that and guide that and steward it?
Well, I love quoting Ben Franklin when he walked out of Independence Hall and people asked what they've been doing in there all that for several weeks. And he told the people, "We've given you a republic," followed by, "If you can keep it." 200. I know, you know, as a country, as a state, we've been here multiple times, but I believe today we are here more than ever at the "if you can keep it" part. And, you know, whether or not it was my lawsuit, whether or not it was standing up against the state mandate in Springfield in late July of last year, we need principled leaders, common sense, people who have actually hired and fired, people who have built something from the ground up, people who have actually physically, you know, put sweat, equity into their business. And that's what we need. Those are the kind of people that we need to govern. And as you spoke, you know, when I went to high school, we had vocational classes. You know, I learned welding. I learned working on small engines. We learned cooking in the home ec classes. We learned how to sew, how to do things. And we went through a period where we thought that we were doing our children justice by trying to push them off to, you know, to a four-year degree. I'm going to suggest now, knowing what I've learned, that not just many, but most of our children are not wired, nor do they have any interest in higher education. And we're actually feeling, we're feeling the pinch of that, because it's a little more difficult to find that plumber, to find that electrician, to find that carpenter, just on and on and on. You know, our factories, our businesses, you know, they're looking for qualified help, and they are having a hard time to find that. So reintegrating work ethic, reintegrating, you know, vocational studies into our schools is going to be very important.
Well, we're going to continue this conversation with State Senator Darren Bailey and look at the road ahead for you in the gubernatorial campaign here on Part of the Answer on AM 560. I'm Dan Erman.
We now return to Part of the Answer on AM 560, The Answer, with your host, Dan Erman.
Welcome back to Part of the Answer on AM 560. I'm Dan Erman, joined today and continuing my conversation with State Senator Darren Bailey. He's a gubernatorial candidate for the June 28th election, yes, in 2022. And Darren, you've been sharing a little bit about your background, your family, the farming, and the work that you're doing. You're working in the state Senate. And one of the things that you work on in the state Senate is you're the Republican representative on the agricultural, is it committee or?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yep, the Ag Committee.
And when I look at farms, I did a little bit of perusing on farms. Something like 85% of farms overall are small family farms, where almost half their income comes from non-farm income. And then you've got about 5% of farms in America that generate like 55 or 56% of overall production. And there's quite a lot of lobby money that goes into the agricultural world, a lot of that driven through D.C., and some of that gets funneled toward kind of the corporate farms, the giant farms, and some to the smaller. How do you navigate that with a sense of wisdom and good stewardship as a nation?
Well, you know, and obviously to your point, there's not a lot of state funding. You know, that goes in that direction. Most of the state funding is goes towards conservation efforts, goes to IDNR. That's where a lot of the state funding of agriculture goes to. You know, there's many private groups, quail Pheasants Forever, Quail Unlimited, that are dumping amounts of money in, you know, for set aside to build up our, you know, our population. I think it's important to realize that, you know, I mentioned I farm 12,000 acres, and from time to time, there's, you know, there are government payments that come out that, in times whenever, you know, your profit margins, you know, fall, below break even, there's a mechanism there. They're designed to do that to keep food price in the United States as cheap as it is, because we do have the lowest cost of food of anywhere in the world, and we actually are responsible, you know, for supplying, you know, much of the world, their products. So, you know, there are, if someone looks at our farms are growing by size, not necessarily because everyone's wants larger corporate farming, but to your point, these small farms, when somebody gets older and decides to retire, many times the next generation is not interested in staying on the farm because of the, you know, the hard work. So the next generation goes off and does something different, and the farm, you know, comes up for rent or for sale, and that's what's allowing, and it really is, it's a shame, because farming is a good way of living. You know, farming is, you know, it's losing its voice because the numbers are fewer, and a lot of misunderstood concepts out there. And you know, to your point, with, you know, the farm program payments, the large farms per acre, you know, there's a cap. They don't get as much. So by any means, if anyone thinks someone is out farming because of farm program payments, they're very, very mistaken, because, you know, farm program payments actually make up about 0.04% of the USDA budget. So yeah, I can assure you, I would much rather be in the position to be able to market my, you know, product, you know, to the end user myself, and be able to navigate and bargain for deals. But that's not how agriculture is set up here in the United States.
I don't typically get that wonky. I don't know a whole lot about it, but I know you do. And so that's why I wanted to ask it. It's kind of in your wheelhouse, and I was curious just to get a little window into that world.
Yeah, I'm willing to have that conversation with anyone anytime. But many times whenever, like, weather adversities, you know, export and import demands, across the world, those are what determine. I don't get to grow, you know, I don't determine how much I grow, because that's determined on the weather. And second of all, when it is growing, I'm at the whim of the government, of what they decide to do, and how the Chicago Board of Trade determines the prices. So,
and there's a sense of depending on the Lord in all
exactly
of that.
For,
he's
got all of that.
He's got to bring the wind and the rain and the multiplier on that. And I think we all need to look to him in that. And, you know, turning the corner to that idea of faith and how that kind of intersects with politics. And there's a whole spectrum on that. When you look at those kind of topics, how can faith inform politics without faith becoming politics? And how do you navigate that?
Well, how I navigate that, I love to look back at our history. I mean, I love to consider why we are a country in the first place. Eastern Europeans were, they were fleeing religious persecution. I love to go back to Concord, Trenton, and Lexington, and those three early communities that stood up, you know, that shot heard around the world. Those were the churches, you know, that stood up against the English army. It wasn't initially the Continental Army. A lot of people have forgotten that. I like to remind myself of what Proverbs 28:2 says, and it says, you know, when there is moral rot in a nation, its government topples easily, but wise and knowledgeable leaders bring stability. You know, our nation, our presidents, our leaders in the past, we have had a rich, rich heritage of when times of peril and trouble come, they go to their knees. They call for days of prayer. And when's the last time that we've had an Illinois governor, you know, suggest that and turn our thoughts and our minds back to our Creator what it is that just sustains us? So now, the church is foundational to our future. And I'm calling Cindy and I, we love getting into a Chicago, into the West Side and the South Side churches. And every Sunday, it seems like we're almost in a new church, and it's time for the church to wake up. And I can say that because I've been there. I've been complacent. I've been apathetic. And we just kind of sat back and thought, well, you know, let's don't get our hands messy with government. And look where we're at today.
Well, that's right. You're hearing from Darren Bailey. He's a governor candidate here in Illinois, and the primary will be coming up in June 2022. So we're a little ways out from that now. Here on Part of the Answer, I'm Dan Ehrman, and I'm going actually through a series of interviewing a lot of the gubernatorial candidates, and you know, just hearing from you and giving folks an opportunity to hear kind of from the horse's mouth, if you will, and to get a feel for what you're about. And as you go into this, a critical issue in Illinois is life. And for me as a Christian, I look at abortion, and there's a pragmatic end to it, but that's like 1% of abortions that go on. So much of what I see abortion to be is really child sacrifice to the idols of expedience and convenience, and to individuals. And you know, for you, you say pro-life is important. What kind of drives that for you?
Well, I believe that life is created at conception. I believe that we are here for a purpose. You know, I believe that if we don't honor life, then God won't bless us in the ways that I think He desires. And again, I think if we look at life here in America and here in the United in Illinois, and we just roll back every decade, and we can see you know, how things are changing, I think we can point to one thing, that there is indeed moral rot in our nation, and that's why we're having a trouble of standing. So again, I'm going to call out the church. The church holds the answer. We can talk about rolling back, you know, Roe versus Wade all day long, but if the church would get in there, do their due diligence, and grab a hold of these, you know, people who are struggling with a possible unwanted pregnancy, we could end abortion that way. You know, there's a ton of families out there, you know, looking to adopt. And not only that, but as, you know, here in, what was it, late 2018, all of a sudden, we as taxpayers began paying for the 40-plus thousand abortions that are taking place here in Illinois. So one of the day one agendas will be ending taxpayer-funded abortion, because Cindy and I have stood out the gates of Planned Parenthood in the Fairview Heights area. And, you can go roll back on our baileyforillinois.com, our website, and our Facebook, and you can see how many states are represented there: Kansas, Nebraska, Missouri, Iowa, Arkansas, Mississippi, on and on and on. These cars, these people are coming to Illinois to get abortions because you and I are paying for them. That's wrong.
It is. And, you know, one of the things that goes on in this debate is I see a progressive agenda at work that is trying to claim things that God has said is sin is not sin. And you can't remove guilt and shame if God says that guilt and shame is there because of your sin. And we can say it's not sin until we're blue in the face, but that shame is before God first, and rather than others. And there's an element of abortion where we're telling a lie to women in a very difficult, there's a no-win situation for so many women in that. And to say, oh, this is an easy out, you're not dealing with that sin and that shame that comes down the road. And it's not that women are evil and doing this, and it's that it's the evil one at work in the world and pulling people into that.
When I was debating on the House floor or in committee over Memorial Day weekend of 2019, my first year as state representative, the full-term abortion bill was up. And the sponsor of that bill, you know, brought the emotion into it that she had had an abortion. If she wouldn't have had an abortion, or, you know, it would have cost her life. And if on further exploration of that, we discovered that she indeed had a tubal pregnancy. She had a DNC. I mean, we've got to wipe the slate clean and redefine and make sure we understand what abortion is, you know, and that's a complication there that is certainly not an abortion.
That's right, and we need to have a lot more grace in that conversation,
right,
as folks who are pro-life and pro-abortion, to really not go to those extremes, but to see the common humanity in each other. Well, Darren, to come to those extremes in politics, if you're elected as governor, you're going to be in a super minority position. In the last minute here, what do you get done?
Well, we need four new seats to the House, which is completely doable. That takes away the supermajority status where we can veto bills. As governor, I will do exactly what I do at BaileyForIllinois.com and on our Facebook. People can see what we're doing. We will stand up. We'll communicate. We'll talk to the people. We'll educate the people. And I think that when a governor does that properly, and that's been a long time since that's been done, and with social media, with the outlets we have, the tools are there. A governor stands up, educates, and informs the constituency, and that they make the right decision because of the freedoms that we have.
Love it. Well, Darren Bailey, we wish you all the best in your run. Thank you for coming in today.
Thank you so much. God bless you.
I'm Dan Erman. Thanks for joining us today on Part of the Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.